Hey, what's up, y'all? Welcome back to another Hold That Podcast podcast. T-Bob Hebert and Brody Miller with you here on the Athletics Hold That Podcast podcast. We have a great deal for you today, and I literally mean today. So if you are listening on April 6th, today's the last day to take advantage of this deal. We'll have more deals in the future, but right now, today, if you go to theathletic.com/holdthatpodcast, you can get a great sign-up deal, just $4 a month for 6 months. So when I tell you it is worth it, it is so worth it. There's no ads, no BS. Any sport or team that you into has a very talented writer covering them, including the LSU Tigers, who have Brody Miller covering them. Brody, what's up, dude?
King of the segue. I'm doing all right, man. Another wild week in the LSU football world of just, God, there's never a dull moment here. And we had pro day last week. There's more going on with the sexual assault investigations and the Senate committee hearings and spring football going on, spring game coming up. So yeah, it's just a tornado of LSU, which, hey, makes good podcasting. But I'm doing all right, T-Bob. How are you?
Yeah, it makes for good podcasting. You would wish that it was a little more just on the field stuff for sure. So whatever. It sucks. We'll get into it. The reputation of LSU just is in complete tatters. And it seems like it might get worse before it gets better. So on today's show, we're going to discuss Pro Day a little bit. We're going to discuss some practices on some of the kind of trends emerging out of practice. But let's start with, like we said, the stuff off the football field just real quick here. I don't know how it's going to spin out. Today, Sharon, who has worked up there for a very long time, came out and there's a USA Today article where she has filed a civil suit against LSU, claiming harassment, among other things. I've not gotten a chance to read through yet. It just broke a little while ago, so we'll have more next week on kind of the fallout from that. But the latest, as far as the legislature is concerned, is that the legislature has called Ogeron, Seeger, Virge Ausberry, and others to come and testify in person or submit a written statement answering their questions. Ogeron will be submitting the written statement. I'm guessing Virgil as well, because I heard he's out of town. I have not heard on Seeger. And it seems like a lot of the Ogeron stuff, for whatever it's worth, mainly has to do with the Gloria Scott case. I said this on my show this morning. Right now, that case is, we're getting new details all the time. I don't know what to fully make of it. There's definitely two sides saying two different things. There's some evidence on both sides. So like, I'm kind of in a wait and see mode before I make any, declarative statement. So is that cowardly? Yes. Am I sitting on the fence? Yes. But I mean, more information's coming out daily. I just want to see the direction this goes before I like offer a very hard take on it one way or another.
Yeah. I think the one thing I'll say on that is it's LSU, if we're just being honest here, no one's coming out and denying Darius Geis did anything to Gloria Scott. Actually, I don't think I've seen a single person argue it did or not.
No, I think with Darius Geis is what we know about him now, that absolutely seems true.
Yes, but what makes this all kind of tough to report on and tough to really just watch happen is that LSU isn't fighting that. I think LSU's, I think right now it's not even about whether it happened. It's about muddying the waters and discrediting and whatnot. And that we're in now LSU is leaking out there that they were trying to be, that Gloria Scott had a representative who was an AU basketball coach trying to extort her. And then, Gloria Scott says she did not authorize that. But what that does is that just kind of diverts the attention to something else. And that is, I think
they're trying to just defend this idea as to whether or not O talked to her and ignored her or not. I mean, that is the Gloria Scott, controversy. And LSU, O has said, to the best of his knowledge, which is a very legal term, and that's what your lawyers tell you to
Absolutely,
do. Yeah. Says to the best of his knowledge, he does not remember talking to her, which I could see. Could also see being a lie, right? Like, I could see anything being true in this. So ultimately, that is kind of why I want to let this thing spin out a little bit and see what happens. But yes, the actual battle is not over whether or not it happened. It's whether or not Ogeron talked to Gloria Scott and took action or failed to do so.
Absolutely. And I'll say Thursday is going to be a, you know, really interesting day for a lot of reasons. I mean, like you said, Ed Orgeron is not expected to be there. He will write something. Birch Ospreay will not be there. Scott Woodward, from what I've been told, is not as of now expected to be there. He was at the last one. He sat there all day and, you know, it ended without talking to him. And they expect him to be the next person up, but it sounds like he is going to take the option of writing something. And the last I heard is Miriam Seeger. There's a chance she does show up. So, but you know, also there's going to be other people there, you know, President Tom Galligan, the Jenny Stewart, the Title IX coordinator, the lawyers from Taylor Porter, who have been representing LSU and kind of, you know, basically their counsel for the last few years. So it's going to be a big day. And I think it's going to be big just because so much of, I think, what all of us want to know now is what happens next, you know, where Hush Blackwell did what its job was, but even that had a limited scope of like, here's what we're focusing on and that's what we're going to investigate. And I think now people wonder what happens now, what are actual consequences? Is there more? Is this what it is? And I think Thursday will be at least telling from that perspective of what's the Senate committee's goals here? What are they going for? So I think that will be at least informative in that sense and just the answer of what comes next. So yeah, all T-Bob and I can really even say right now, but it is an unfortunate situation. And it does make, you know, it's just another, you know, 6 months of just kind of negative news for LSU.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like I said, the reputation's in tatters. Although again, I would say it was still one of the key findings, in my opinion, on the Hush Blackwell report in terms of just what I actually found is that it was not just athletics doing it. Like, it was not just athletics getting special treatment or anything. This is a system that was broken campus-wide. And really watching like those watching the legislature and stuff and them interview people, to me, it's been a masterclass in teaching me how when an institution or a system is truly like corrupt or broken, that's actually how everybody gets protected, because technically everybody is doing their job in one way or another. But it's just like the system is so obfuscated or underfunded. Like it's just really disappointing on so many different fronts. And I wonder if heads will roll or not. We'll have to see. It hasn't happened up to this point. But whatever. That's that. Like I said, we're going to see where that spins out and we'll revisit it at a later date. As far as on the field, it actually is pretty good right now, ironically, at least we think it is. It seems like you have a lot of talent right now. Some groups starting to develop. Before we get to let's talk about some of the old crew. As LSU Pro Day was last week and everybody ran really damn good times. Jamar Chase basically locked himself in as wide receiver one. Maybe there's still some debate there, but like, you know, he didn't lose anything. Certainly, Terrace Marshall ran great, a bit shorter than I thought. I think he's the tallest 6'2" and a half person I've ever met in my life. But Brody, what do you think is who were the big winners from last week's pro day?
Well, I think you almost have to start with like the numbers they put up across the board were pretty shocking and absurd. I think there's like everybody kind of like looking at those 40 times and being like, all right, this isn't the real combine, it's the pro day. Are these numbers skewed? But then you have Jane Slater and a few others coming out saying like, no, scouts have confirmed these numbers, these are real. But yeah, I think and maybe some of this is just the positions that were there. You know, it was pretty much like 90%, you know, receivers and corners and stuff like that. But
well, there's also, as far as the 40 time thing goes, I think there is a weird thing where at the combine you do electronic times, but
yes,
if you talk to NFL people, they say they actually don't go by the electronic times. And I guess maybe it's because they've like never done that in the past. So they're trying to like maintain some, I don't know. It seems like there's some old school thing in football scouting where they're still going with the scouts hand timers. And that is where these numbers are actually coming from, is some sort of like amalgamation or some sort of consensus or something on those scouts hand timers. But here's the deal. It's don't get so married to the hundredth of a second.
Thank
just
you.
Basically yeah. Understand that they hit the exact times that they needed to impress people and show that, okay, they do have elite speed.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get to. Absolutely. Well put. Yeah, I think the big thing I came away with was just, it's like one of those things where I'm not just saying this, like everybody that I can come across the board basically did exactly what they had to do, which is not always the case. You know, Jamar Chase was already probably receiver one. Well, he exceeded a lot of those expectations. You know, even he expected like a 4.4. He got a 4.38. Jacoby Stevens, you know, the one thing about him was his tape didn't look good, and people kind of, the narrative became like, he's not that athletic to play safety. And I don't know if he should. I think maybe he probably would be better as a linebacker, but he at least came out there and kind of blew everyone away physically with his 42-inch vertical, with his 4.5 40, which even shocked me. I didn't expect a 4.5.
And he almost jumped 11 feet in the broad, went in like 10-8 or something.
And then you have Kerry Vincent, and like his number one selling point is that he is a track star and all that. Well, he runs a 4.33, or, you know, Racy McMath is going to be a superstar special teams gunner. He runs a 4.34. Everybody just kind of did what they really needed to do, except for obviously Jabril Cox, who didn't get to perform. But I mean, I think he's going to be fine. So I think it was just really, and also I forgot to mention another big one is Tyler Shelvin. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend I have any idea how his numbers were, you know, testing wise, but I think the big thing for him was, and it's a huge question mark, was, is he actually going to be in shape? Is he actually, these last 5 months of opting, 6 months of opting out, these guys already had weight problems, how would he handle that? And I have a story coming out either this week or next on that whole situation, but he showed up at a pretty fit looking 350, and that's big. He looked fit, you know, and like,
no, but it's crazy. All these other cats are having to run like 4.3s and 4.4s. And it's like, okay, can Tyler Shelvin be 350 pounds? Like that's the bar that he needs to hit. But you're right. He did. And he looked good at it.
He looked good. So I don't know if that's going to make him, you know, I'm not saying it's going to make him a second rounder or something. It's possible. But I just think that's a big thing, feather in his cap going into this next few weeks. So I think everyone did what they want. And I think it just really, like you're saying, Ja'Marr Chase was the storyline, because I think it was, we already knew he was the dude, and it's just like, oh, this guy, it kind of seemed like he gained even more wide receiver one stock, and it's really setting up for an interesting day on draft day. I mean, you know, Bengals obviously have Joe Burrow, and it's just looking more and more like quarterbacks definitely going 1, 2, 3. And I know the Falcons might not take a quarterback, but now Schefter reported about an hour ago that, you know, now they're even looking more into, does someone want to trade into four? And I say all that to say is, you know, and granted, I'm a, you know, casual Bengals fan, so I follow it a little closer, but it really is setting up for the Bengals at five to basically be picking between Ja'Marr Chase and Penei Sewell. And then their GM, Duke Tobin, just yesterday kind of was talking on a podcast saying how, well, they actually think there's more O-line depth in this draft than there is receiver depth, and they feel better about getting an O-lineman, you know, later if they don't get Sewell in the first round. And it just feels more and more like the momentum is moving toward Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase reuniting, which is kind of a crazy thing. It's not something you really see ever in sports.
So I want to give my take on that, but you start as the resident Bengals fan. what would you do? Because it is interesting, like any other name but Penei Sewell, and I think it's easily Ja'Marr Chase, because I don't think you're going to find as sure of a thing, but Penei Sewell is right there with Chase and guys that feel like sure things, like can't miss guys.
Yeah, I think, you know, for example, I think a lot of Bengals fans are kind of wanting them to like fall back, and I think the Bengals are pretty much sticking to the mentality of like, there's only a handful of like, not only, but like there's a handful of like those holy crap guys, and I don't think they want to move out of that holy crap.
Why do they want him to trade back?
Oh, just, I mean, I'm a big believer and I want more bites at the apple. I'd rather have like two top 25 picks than one top 10 pick. Like I am in that line of thinking, you know, but still,
I'm starting to move away from that a little bit.
They want a holy crapper, you know, and that's my metric.
But Ja'Marr Chase and Penei Sewell are both holy crappers. So if they
they're absolutely bad, holy crappers.
So both, what should they do?
My personal just deep down gut is like, I would want Sewell. But this is where I become a really boring guy to listen to talk about sports, is I always have a hard time like having strong opinions in the draft, because I always have to throw out the caveat of like, but it very much depends on like, how does this NFL GM actually evaluate that guy? Because I'm not basing this off my stupid opinion of watching like seven quarters of Penei Sewell up close, you know, like that's I'd be talking out my ass.
I watched some of that Auburn game.
He's awesome. No, he's awesome. And if so, here's a better way for me to phrase this and make this better podcasting is, if you are telling me on the Bengals board they have Ja'Marr Chase and Penei Sewell dead even, I would prefer they take Penei Sewell. I think having that is
what I'm asking you. If they have it as dead even,
I would go Penei Sewell. But I also understand, you know, it goes back to the old Joe Brady line of thinking, right? Of, it's actually better to have amazing skill players and just keep five guys back to protect, because then you can get the ball out faster and you can almost neutralize the offensive line weaknesses. And the idea of having Chase, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, and Joe Mixon as your four main skill guys is kind of frightening. Like, that's that's one of the better young cores you're going to see around Joe Burrow. So I think I can see that, and I can definitely get behind that as a Bengals fan, the idea of being like, all right, this is that, and then you could get the O-line depth from there, but you can get the ball out faster. I'm cool with that. But my personal deep down gut, I want Penei Sewell.
Yeah, I think that, look, Penei Sewell obviously offers much more protection for Burrow than does Chase, but Chase does come, because of what you were just talking about, he comes with a modicum of protection and just the ceiling, the big playability, the chemistry that's already there, the fact that I think, has Burrow publicly advocated for the move, or is that kind of coming out through the grapevine that he would be into reuniting with Chase?
So I don't think he said anything like that, but Duke Tobin kind of had a comment yesterday in that same podcast yesterday where he was kind of like, you know, someone asked him if like he talks to, you know, Joe Burrow about this, and he's like, well, you know, Joe Burrow's an engaging guy, and I like getting the opinions of engaging guys, and I'll leave it at that. So, you know, you can kind of take that as like, I think it's clear, you know, Joe Burrow would like that, and it's kind of, I don't know.
So that would tip me. That would tip me to actually go Chase there.
And it's tricky, because I don't think the Chase camp elsewhere is exactly like, I want to go to the Bengals. I don't think that's their first choice. I think they'd rather go to Miami or something like that. But at the same time, it was kind of, and I don't want to speak for him, but it was kind of funny to watch, you know, the interviews after Pro Day, and everyone's like, he got three or four questions about teaming up with Burrow. And
he was a little like a reserve.
It
was definitely not like, oh, hell yeah, cool, that'd be awesome. He was like,
he basically was like, it would be cool to team up with Joe, but like the vibe was very much like, but that's not exactly where I want to go. So, and obviously I don't think Jamar Chase is some like spoiled brat who's going to be like, I'm not going to Cincinnati, but I don't think that's like his dream scenario.
I think if we were to ask most people, if you could be a young 22-year-old multimillionaire, would you rather live in Cincinnati or South Beach? I think if people are being honest, I think there's probably a clear winner there. It's not to say both cities are not great. It's not to say that you couldn't have a lot of fun in Cincinnati. You will, absolutely. But
you could be a king in Cincinnati, though. You kidding me? Yeah. That $20 million in Cincinnati versus Miami.
That is true. That $20 million is not going nearly as far in Miami. Yeah, you want to be at the club. Yeah, I get it. So that'll be interesting to watch that spin out. But yeah, it was just nice to see Jamar Chase again. Like, that was my entire takeaway from Pro Day, is what a bummer that you missed out on having him last season. But good on him for taking advantage of that time. Oh, also, I would say this. Big validation of Terrace Marshall's decision as well, right? I mean, the reason why he left after game 7 or 8, in my mind, how I justified it at least, was like, look, this was normally when a season would end. The combine is not football training. He knows it's going to be important for him to prove speed and everything else. He needs to go start that training immediately so he can perform. And, well, I think he justified that decision by putting up those times. Still shocked he measured at 6'2.5". I mean, does that shock you as much as it did me?
A little, I guess. I expect him to be in that 6'3.5", 6'4" range. But at the same time,
I always assumed he was at least 6'4". He looks so long. That's
what matters. I think his wingspan was pretty good. Okay. Like, I don't think any scout is like, wait, he's only 6'2.5". I don't know if I feel the same way. Like,
no, I don't think it's like a knock anymore on him. It's just like a curiosity to me, because his body looks like 6'5". Like, But shout out Terrace Marshall. I think validated his decision, tested very well. Like you said, Jacoby helped himself out, and no real horror stories or anybody hurting themselves. So,
really none, yeah.
A nice job by those guys getting ready. Okay, Brody, we'll spend a couple minutes here on what's actually going on during spring practice, because while there are some things, there's nothing terribly pressing right now. We talked to Coach O this morning on our show, and one of the things that did stand out to me last week, he talked about what a disappointment the running back room had been.
And he said today, that too, for about 3 weeks now. Like, yes. It's like a 3 week in a row where like he called it disappointing, frustrating, all these things.
Yeah. And so today marked the first time in which he seemed to offer a little positive reinforcement for the running back, saying that for the first time yet this spring, they finally looked like the room that he thought they would be. And that I think he specifically called out Ty Davis Price as having like a couple of really good runs on Thursday's practice or something. So some improvement in that running back room.
It's I think he put it as well as I could ever put it last week, I believe, on your show, when he might have been with our press conference. But he said, he's like, this position group should be the strength of the team, and it's not. And that's where the frustration comes. It's not like it's, say, linebacker or safety, where it's like, oh, you know where the, like, there's a literal problem. and you're just trying to solve it, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, no, you have in theory all the pieces, all the talent, all the things you want, you would want as a recruiter, a roster management guy to do, and it's just not coming together. And of course, injuries are a part of that, but you and I both know that's not all of it. There is frustration with how guys are developing. Yeah. Little things like that. And you know, I mean, it's one of those things where you've heard it, I've heard it, that, you know, they do this little vote and, you know, about where guys, who represents LSU best, who represents LSU, you know, worst, for lack of a better term. And, you know, the Emery's and Davis Prices have kind of showed up at the bottom sometimes in those votes. So I think, you know, Ed Orgeron, when he talks about wanting more and wanting those guys to step up, that's what he's referring to. So I think it's just such, like, for example, last year, remember we did those stability rankings of the position groups? And,
yeah.
And you and I kind of agreed, I believe, on having running back number two, because we were just like, the line we used was like, we know what we're getting. Like, I don't know if one guy's going to be a superstar, but we know what we're getting. Four or five deep, good running backs. And I don't think we can just use that benefit of the doubt assumption anymore, because they haven't broken out. They haven't really produced like you'd want them to. So it's just such an interesting position. But like you're saying, it is promising that after criticizing it 3 weeks in a row, he did throw out some positives today.
Yeah, and I also think that, make no mistake, like, I think when it coaches, sometimes stuff slips, but in my view, most of the times when people, when a coach is like, that room has been disappointing, that then they say that in public, that is a direct challenge to them.
Yes.
That's not strategic. Yes, that is strategic. You are challenging them in the public realm to raise their level of play, and they must have, because then you give them a little love today. The only thing that else that really stood out to me, there's some stuff about Derek Stingley becoming a leader, which I found kind of interesting. The quarterbacks legitimately challenging the LSU secondary, like not backing down from them. And really the quarterback play, I will say this in the quarterback play. He said that Miles won Thursday for whatever that's worth, but that it's just been an absolute battle. It seems like everybody really loves Nussmeier's crazy style of play. Orgeron talked about how he brings a different element than anybody else in that room. Derek Stingley Sr. today called him like a little Johnny Manziel out there. So like Nussmeier seems to be like, I'll say this for quarterback. I've heard so much coded quarterback talk at LSU over the years. I can tell when they're just answering the question because they have to answer, and when there's genuine excitement about the position, and they are genuinely excited right now.
No, I think you're right. And I love that you brought up Nussmeier, and I brought it up last week too, a good amount. But it's like, again, I don't think any of us right now would put our money on him being the 2021 starter or anything like that. But they are like blown away. They were high on him. He's top 100 quarterback. He was the highest signee they've gotten in quite some time. But just, they're really like, wow, taken aback, I think, by how good he is. And he's probably the most athletic of these four guys. He's probably the best, like, just like pure, I know, arm talent. No, I'm not going to say that, but he's, you know, you could argue he's probably the most talented passer, you know, in terms of like upside and all that on this roster. Like, he's the guy. He's a star. I just don't think you ever want to rely on a true freshman when you already have pretty darn good options in Brendan and Max Johnson. But yeah, I think he's a guy you just like, he's really been a star of this camp, but he's an early enrollee quarterback too. It's not even like he's a normal freshman. So I think that's worth bringing up. Absolutely. And yeah, I think I am with you, and we talked about this on the show, so we won't belabor it last week, but just, I think I really expected this to be a, you know, just a mouth service kind of quarterback battle, and then, you know who it is, and I just don't think it is. I think it's really a battle. Yeah. I think it's, they are really, really impressed with what Max Johnson does, and they have confidence because of those last two games that, you know, there's an argument to be made that he might actually get the most out of the talent around them. And I still think Brennan's in it. Like, I'm not putting down Brennan. Like you said, he might have won last week and all that. It's just more interesting than I ever would have expected.
Yeah. And again, it's just a great thing, great issue to have. The last thing that I would say was interesting is he was talking about how going into spring, one of the positions that he was most concerned about was safety and linebacker. And that he especially highlighted linebacker as being a position that he's very pleased with the development of. And yeah, I think that's true. No, I was just going to say, I think that's crucial given the big question mark it was. We all know about our guy, Buck Strong. And then he talked about some of the advantages of having Blake Baker teaching back there and just his college coaching acumen, being a defensive coordinator, that he's done a really, really good job with these guys of, you know, explaining responsibility and communication while not making it overly dense and really focusing on like playing fast. And if you're going to make a mistake, that's fine. Just make it like make it aggressively, which is an ethos that a lot of people abide by. And it's one that I personally have always really agreed with.
Yeah, no, Blake Baker's kind of been a bit of a rising kind of star. I mean, he's already a rising star in the coaching field and kind of had a little bit of a dip. But the buzz has been pretty strong on him. And I was a little taken back. I remember when I did that Mike Jones story and I'm talking to him and his family. And I almost was like setting it up to be like, yeah, how big was Durante Jones and you know, Mike Jones coming over? And they were like, and they kind of like suddenly, and they weren't criticizing Jones. They like Jones. But they were like, honestly, actually, Blake Baker's what got us there. And that was kind of surprising to hear that. They're all in on Blake Baker. And I think I have a reputation of being like the cynic on a lot of this stuff. So I preface that with that. But like, I'm somebody who like never gets like wrapped away, carried away with the mic'd up videos that they do with all the coaches and all that. Yeah. The Blake Baker one was actually like, I don't know if you watched that one. It was like, oh, okay. That's actually like, this guy seems like he has like a certain energy or around him where it's like, oh, I actually think that might be a really good hire for what they need right now. And like, you saw the way like he was like giving players crap and they were responding to it. You saw the way other defensive coaches kind of responded to him. I don't know. I don't want to get carried away with stuff like that, but it was actually noticeable. But anyway, I still have to say, yeah, I never really walked around with like a major concern about linebacker, at least not the last month or two. You know, I think Micah Baskerville, chances are, is back eventually. And I don't know if he's going to be a starter. My money right now would be on no, but like, you know, he's a guy you can trust and they like Josh White's development, even if he's not the guy. Bug Strong seems like a real dude and Damone Clark is improving. I don't think you should rule him out ever. And then you do have Mike Jones coming. So it's like, I just don't look at that area as like a huge, like, oh no, they're in trouble question mark anymore. Like I might've 3 months ago.
There you go.
I think safety is where I have more questions, where it's like, I'm as high on Jay Ward as anyone. I think Jay Ward is gonna. I wrote a feature on him. I like his rising stock and all that. But still, like, I don't know if I think Jay Ward's gonna be some all SEC guy. I don't. I think I have to start selling the Todd Harris stock and be like, he's always gonna be serviceable. I don't think Todd Harris is ever gonna change your defense. You know, Jordan Toles, you're hoping he steps up. You're counting on these two freshmen, but like, that's the one where I still remain having a lot of questions. I think linebacker. I actually feel, just to bounce off everything you just said, relatively optimistic.
Yeah, and as far as safety goes, I'm with you. We're definitely, I mean, for both positions, you're in improvement mode, but certainly maybe even more so at safety because it's you didn't have someone like a Bug Strong come in. Now you got the young guys coming, so we'll see where that goes.
Yes.
One thing I did like hearing about safety, and this has been a constant theme, is that apparently the chatter is constant. It seems like communication is a ever-present underlying theme of this spring defensively. And, you know, whatever, just anecdotally talking to people, it seems like that's been successful so far. This defense is talking in ways, efficient ways, that they did not last season. So we'll see.
We'll see.
But on the field, feels good. On the field, feels good. Off the field, not so much. We'll see where it all goes. Brody, anything else? Maybe recommend that game that we were talking to about before the pod if anybody wants anything nerdy to check out.
You love hyping up my nerdness whenever you can on your radio show or your podcast. I think everyone who listens to the show has learned that my pandemic discoveries have been mainly that I am a bigger strategy game nerd than I knew I was.
Yeah.
And I have been diving. It's a 5-year-old game. It's from 2016, but it's Hearts of Iron 4, where it's like you start as like a, you know, it's 1936 and like World War II is coming. You start as any country you want, whether it's like Estonia, Italy, or Germany or whatever. And like, and you basically just like work your industry, your infrastructure, your diplomacy to like maneuver all these things. You can kind of take it any path you want. It's been my weekend obsession. It's not great for my social life.
Hell yeah, dude. I'm back addicted to WoW Classic, which is about as valueless of a pursuit as you could imagine, besides having fun with your friends. So no judgment here, bro. No judgment here. I'm power leveling a mage. That's my life.
Big day.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that'll do it for this week's Hold That Podcast. Again, theathletic.com/holdthatpodcast. If you're listening today on April 6th, go there today. $4 a month for 6 months. It is so worth it. And there's always great sign-up deals that you can find if you just Google around a little bit. But certainly review it, like it, share the pod if you do enjoy it. That really helps us. And y'all have an excellent day. Bro, are you good? Anything else?
I think that's it, man. Great show.
All right. We'll be back next week with another HTPP. See you then.